Welcome back to the Talking Footy Podcast. Each week across the footy season, we are talking with the biggest names in the game. I'm Brad Sewell, and this week's guest is former head of coaching development at my beloved Hawks and current senior coach of the Brisbane Lions, Tassie Footy Hall of Famer, Chris Fagan. In this chat with Fags, we discuss some of the football identities that he's worked with, namely Neil Danaher, Brendan Bolton, and of course, Alistair Clarkson. He also opens up about some of the biggest issues facing the AFL, namely mental health and some of the internal and external pressures the players face today within the AFL bubble.
I'm seeing more and more players suffering from mental health issues, and I'm convinced it's because there is so much pressure on them now externally, not so much internally. I think internally clubs are becoming way better at taking the pressure off, but there's so much media now, so much analysis of the game, all that. I really do worry about that.
After 260 games in the Tassie Football League, in addition to a variety of coaching administration roles within the Melbourne Demons, Hawthorn, and of course now is a senior coach at the Brisbane Lions, Fagg sits down to share with me his football story and reflects upon his first year as senior coach at the Brisbane Lions. We're talking footy. Fagg, thanks for joining us. Firstly, I learnt something over the last couple of weeks researching this, and we've obviously worked together quite a bit at Hawthorn, but your first name is actually not Chris.
No, my first name is Christian. I've never been able to live up to that name.
You're lucky that got under the radar at the Hawks.
Yeah, some people knew. Jared Roughhead used to call me Christian. He somehow found out about it. But I was named after my grandfather, so Mum's maiden name was Schultz and her dad's name was Christian Schultz, very German. So I got called Christian and my second name was Mark, who's my dad's father was Mark. So that's how I was named, mate. So you've done well there with that bit of research.
I was pretty happy with that. And, and secondly, I've also just learned that upon accepting this request, you're actually unsure of what a podcast is. Is that right?
Well, I've never actually done a podcast before, Sully, and I am 56, so I can be excused for not being up with.
Right.
I've heard of podcasts, so I just wasn't sure how it sort of happened and what you did, so that's why I asked the question.
That's very good.
You live and learn.
You do indeed. Now, Faze, your story within football is, I find, one of the more interesting, and initially, of course, coming from Tassie, one of the Hall of Famers down there.
Yes, I lived in Tassie until I was. I think I was about 36 maybe when I moved over. Born and bred in Queenstown on the west coast of Tasmania.
The Gravel Oval.
The Gravel Oval, yeah. It's a gravel over there because it's an area of high rainfall, and some bright spark many, many years ago figured that turf wasn't going to last for very long in Queenstown, so they used this sort of gravel surface to play on, which was really excellent in the rain because the water would just drain straight off. It was no good when you fell on it because it cut your legs open and you got gravel rash. And nobody that lived outside of Queenstown liked to come and play on that oval. But that's where I cut my teeth and cut my legs. My dad was a footy coach there. I lived there until I was 15. It's a copper mining town. So I finished high school there and then I moved to Hobart because I wanted to do matriculation, which that's the old word for year 11 and 12. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, my mum and dad decided to move as well, so we didn't break the family up, moved to Hobart together. Played footy in the league down there, made my senior debut at the age of 16. Would have been about 60 kilos, dripping wet. Kicked a goal with my first kick.
Illustrious club.
Yes. I played probably 13 or so seasons down in Tassie, 260-odd games, and played for Tassie, which was one of my thrills in my career. And
a number of times?
Yeah, I don't know, maybe 10, a dozen times, I'm not sure, over a five or six-year period. But that was, you know, other than winning premierships, that was the one sort of great thing you could do as a footballer in Tassie, is be selected in the Tassie side and play against Queensland or play against the Big V. My first game was against the Big V. Kevin Bartlett was running around for the Big V, Dale Waitman. And I remember getting crunched in that game. I was 19 at the time. I got crunched. I can't remember who got me, but I couldn't breathe for about 5 minutes after that happened. And my only other recollection of that game was how tired my legs were in the last quarter. I just couldn't pick them up. And normally I was a good kick, and I got this free kick about 30 metres out from goal and could not make the distance. So it's probably all that nervous energy. But that was a real thrill for an to play footy for my state.
Playing football for your state and then entering the coaching domain down there, domestic football, and then the TAC Cup or under-18s as it was then, and then to Melbourne.
Yeah, so I think in terms of coaching, my love of coaching probably started way back when I was a kid because my dad coached the local footy team in Queenstown. So I just went to training with him and hung around with him and learnt some good habits and some not so good habits, I guess, hanging around minors that could swear a bit and all that sort of stuff. It's I think that's where it started, the coaching bug. I had some really good teachers at high school who encouraged me to pursue a career, which didn't necessarily involve working at the copper mine in Queenstown. And I sort of loved so much what some of my teachers did for me that I wanted to become a teacher. So that's what I did. Did a Bachelor of Education at University of Tasmania, and obviously was playing footy at the time. And as the years rolled by, I went from playing to coaching. I coached at North Hobart. I was the fitness coach and the bench coach. That was my sort of first coaching gig in a senior sense. Mark Yates, who played at Geelong, was the coach. Mm-hmm. He was the playing coach. I just retired. So fundamentally, he played, I got to coach the team, and I was a fitness bloke as well. And we won two flags in 2 years, so it was a nice introduction. And then I decided I would go. Mark went back to Melbourne. I decided I wanted to coach a team of my own right. And I read somewhere, and I can't remember who said this, but they said you don't know how to coach until you go to a club that doesn't know how to win, and you teach them how. And my old club, Sandy Bay, hadn't won a game for a couple of years, and they were looking for a coach. So I applied and was able to get the job. It was a testing sort of a job. They had won for 2 years. I figured there was no downside. The only way was to go up, and we took a pretty young side in the first year. I think we managed to win 6 or 7 games, and then recruited a few guys over the summer that sort of made a little bit of difference. And the following year, we made the preliminary final. And then sort of, I suppose, there was a major turning point in my life. Tassie got a team in the TAC Cup, and they were looking for a coach, and it was a full-time position as state director of coaching and obviously coaching that team. So I suppose what had happened to me over the years, I always thought I'd love to be able to combine my love of football with my love of teaching and to have that as a full-time job. And there weren't many jobs going around in Tassie that you could actually do that. It was probably 2 or 3. Well, one was the sort of the bloke in charge of the Footy Foundation down there, and as it turned out, this role. So I applied for it, went for it with all my heart, and I managed to get it. So I had 3 years coaching the Tassie Mariners.
Yep.
And then Melbourne Footy Club were advertising for a reserves and development coach, and it was when Neil Danaher was first appointed as coach of the D's. And so I sent my CV over, not expecting to even get an interview. It was half of just testing the waters, and I got an interview. So I think they interviewed 5 or 6 people. So I came over for the interview. Was probably totally intimidated in the interview. I walked out, and I thought of all the good answers to the questions when I walked out the door, and thought, oh, well, good experience, jump on the plane, go back to Tassie. I'll live to fight another day and have a go at it at a later time. But 2 days later, I was on top of the Ferris wheel with my two daughters at the Royal Hobart Show, and the phone went, and it was Neil saying, would I come back for a second interview? And I couldn't believe it. I was down to the last two. And as it turned out, I got that job. So that was the next big moment in my life, moving the family and everyone over to be the reserves and development coach at the Melbourne Footy Club. And that was 1998, Neil's first year. Had 10 great years with him at the Demons. I had a couple of years as the reserves and development coach, then I coached the backs, then I coached the forwards, and then I became the footy manager for 3 years. And then Clarko persuaded me to move to the Hawks. Neil had finished his time at Melbourne, so I felt like that was a good time for me to go. Clarko had come up with this newfangled role called head of coaching and development at Hawthorn, and most of you blokes didn't have any clue what I was actually doing when I first turned up.
We still scratch our heads now, I think.
And to tell you the truth, I probably didn't know myself. They didn't really write me a position description. They just said, well, we want you to coach the coaches a bit, and we want you to sort of make sure the development program's right for all the players. So you work out how you do that and write your own position description. So
I look forward to scratching the surface of that one.
I did that. And then obviously, like, I didn't know at the time when I made that move that I would be going to Hawthorn in one of its most golden eras, you know, to be there for 9 years and be involved in five grannies and four flags. Amazing. Normal.
Just before we scratch the surface a little bit further there, Fags, Danaher said throughout your time, finding Chris Fagan was the best recruiting decision I'd made in all of my time at Melbourne. His work ethic, his people management skills and his enthusiasm are unparalleled. And he was a cool head I needed because I could get a bit feisty at times. You had a lot to thank Neil for. He was the first one that sort of, I guess, believed in you and bringing you over.
Oh, massively. You know, like, I actually had the opportunity to move to Hawthorn a year earlier than I did. Mm. And the reason I didn't was because he'd given me my first opportunity in AFL footy and he had a year to go on his contract. And I was hoping that he would have a good year and that he would continue to coach at Melbourne and I'd continue to work there. So, that's how strongly I felt about him. I mean, the Hawks offered me a job. It was sort of a dream role for me in as head of coaching and development. Yep. And, no, I couldn't do that out of loyalty to him. And well, he showed enormous faith in me from the day I arrived at Melbourne. And, you know, I suppose you have to understand, I'm just this bloke from Tassie that played a bit of footy down there and I'm a teacher and I'm turned up into the big world of AFL footy. Mm. And, you know, I remember the first day at Melbourne, he introduced me to the group and I'm looking around, there's Jim Steins and Gary Lyon and Stephen Tingay and Todd Viney and all these sort of guys that are sort of bits of legend in my mind. And, you know, he's introducing me and saying, do I want to say a few words, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, what do I say to these folks? I said, oh, I'm really grateful for the opportunity and I hope I can earn your respect over the next little while. And you know, Neil was a great person to me in that he was always giving me feedback and encouraging me and helping me to believe in myself, because you need a bit of that when you first turn up and your background's not necessarily AFL. It's just that little, that may be a hurdle in your own mind, but it's certainly an obstacle you have to overcome. And he embraced me in a magnificent way, and yeah, we had a great partnership pretty much for 10 years. I think I was the only bloke that spent the whole time there with him in his 10 years. You know, we got to a grand final in 2000 and
so close.
Played in six or so final series, and, you know, the Demons haven't played in the final since. And he was history should say that he was a fine coach and did a great job with the D's at a time when they didn't have a lot of money. And, you know, we had some talented players, but we were nowhere near the most talented team.
As that, I guess, career coach you've become or within football, what did you learn specifically from Neil and, I guess, the coaching department and the Melbourne Football Club during that time?
Yeah, I learned a lot from Neil in about how you prepare and you analyse the opposition. He worked extremely hard on the upcoming teams, but he also worked extremely hard on the way that we played ourselves. I remember my first pre-season with the Demons, we had a month at Caulfield Grammar School every day, and it was like a living. We didn't stay there at night, but basically there were full days where he taught the whole game plan and how we're going to go about things. It was quite revolutionary at the time, and he could really dissect the game like no one else I'd ever met at that stage. The other thing I learnt from him too was you've got to change as a coach. You can't just go in and where you start, you're the same person at the end. Mm. You know, and I saw him change the way he coached. When he first started at the D's, it was my way or the highway, and he could give some of the best bakes I'd ever seen. And, you know, they weren't even directed at me, and I'd be intimidated by them at times. And after two or three years, he realised that he needed to change a little bit, that if we were going to progress, that he had to sort of hand over a bit of ownership to the team itself. And when David Neitz became captain at the beginning of the year 2000, Neil became a lot more empowering in that way. And we developed our leadership group and they had a fair influence over the way the group conducted itself on and off the field. But to me, that just showed another side to Neil. I didn't know that he could change like that. I thought he was going to be that fire and brimstone coach all the way through. But in his 10 years at Melbourne, he evolved all the time. And the other thing he was great at was being the spokesperson for the football club. I think they called him the Reverend there at one stage. And that was really because at the time, you know, at the time I was at Melbourne, it was a struggle for us. We didn't have a lot of money. Our supporter base wasn't huge. Our performances fluctuated a little bit. And, you know, he was the one that really tried to unite the club and the members and everyone behind what was happening.
He's a man that has now transcended football and has become a spokesperson for a much larger cause. You still keep in touch with Neil?
Yeah, I try to talk to him on a regular basis, not as regular as I would like, but he rings me occasionally, I ring him occasionally, and now when I'm in Melbourne, I pop in to see him every now and then. We have a good chat about footy. I look at him now and I think he is the most selfless person that I've ever met. You know, he's got this disease which is going to get him in the end, and he knows it, but he's spending every waking hour that he has left on the planet trying to raise money to find a cure so that people down the track can overcome, you know, what is eventually going to kill him. And he does it with such a smile on his face and, you know, such a positive attitude. What he's done for that cause is just amazing and set a great example to everybody else about, you know, putting others before yourself and accepting what life deals up to you and try and make the most of it, I guess.
What drives me and what drives you comes from within. In football, there is an element of self to get the best out of yourself. There's an element of that that's true to everyone. You want to be the best you can be. And there's a continuum. If you're looking at self, over there is selfish and over there is selfless on that line. And nothing great can get done with selfish people. Nothing. So where do you sit on that? And to be great together, you have to be selfless. And where that sits with you, you can say whatever you like, but your teammates know by what you do. By what you do. There's a saying, when all's said and done, more is said than done. And the mark of a person is not what they say, it's what they do.
He's become a hero in so many people's eyes. There aren't many roles in football that you haven't had. And then, as you touched on before, Clarko and the Hawks had a couple of cracks at you. And it wasn't until the second attempt where he got you over as that coach of the coach's role, predominantly. You said before you didn't actually have a role description, but what did you do at Hawthorn then? We saw you charging around the whole time.
Yeah.
And it's obviously a pivotal role throughout a phenomenal period for the Hawks.
Yeah.
What did you hang your hat on doing that?
I think coaches are performers in their own right, as are players. Mm-hmm. And what had happened around the time that Clarko got the job at Hawthorn, there was sort of a bit of a revolution in the number of coaches there were at AFL clubs. I mean, when I first started, there was three of us, the head coach, the assistant coach and the reserves coach. That was in 1998.
Yeah.
By the time we got to 2008, 10 years later, there were anywhere between 7 and 10 coaches at an AFL club. So the job of coordinating the coaches towards a common goal was probably a difficult thing for the senior coach to do, given all his responsibilities with the team, et cetera. So Clarko thought in his wisdom that it would be good to appoint somebody at the club who could coordinate the coaches, keep them developing, keep them challenged, challenge him, help him a bit. As well as run the development program for all the coaches. And for some reason or other, he thought I could do that. We had a little bit of time together at Melbourne early days. My first year there was his last year there. And so we had a bit of a friendship and kept in touch. And, yeah, he must have liked the way that I went about things and thought I would could be the person that would do that role. And it was a really exciting role. You know, often what happens at AFL clubs is that assistant coaches come in and they don't always get feedback on how they're going and they wonder. What we set up at Hawthorn, as you would know, was a really good performance appraisal system that the players participated in, and the coaches got really meaningful feedback and were able to develop. Hopefully you saw that in front of your eyes. And, we got, and I suppose, in a way, we developed all those coaches and then they went and coached somewhere else.
And, I mean, that strikes me because Clarko is the Doyne of coaching at this point in time, and he'll go down as history. He's one of the greatest coaches.
Yep.
And he's been, and rightfully so, lauded as having produced Adam Simpson, Leon Cameron, Brendan Bolton, Damien Hardwick, Luke Beveridge, and, of course, yourself. But you produce them as the director of coaching.
I would say that Clarko and I had a partnership and that we did that together. And I think the sort of environment that he created before I arrived there was one of innovation and of growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'd be fair to say that on that score that I think both of us helped those guys equally. And and he had the foresight to create that position that enabled that to occur.
Yeah.
And I think, and you would have seen this, I think it's really good for the players to see that the coaches put a lot of pressure on them to develop and grow, but we were putting a lot of pressure on ourselves to develop and grow too, and that was a good role model for you guys at the time.
Yeah, well, it was. I mean, you guys challenged yourselves as much as you expected the players to challenge each other as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, when I first got the job at Brisbane, I got asked a few questions about Hawthorn. I said, well, really, in a funny sort of a way, it was like a football university. Yeah. You know, we went there and we learned and we got better and we grew not only in our knowledge of football, but the development of people, life skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of you guys that have come through that successful era, I think the great majority of you are going to go on to lead great lives, not just in football, but in all the other things that you do because of the values and things that you learnt during that period of time. And that's what you try to create, really.
Yeah. And you became Clarko's sounding board for a lot of the different concepts, philosophies that we developed throughout the period of time as well.
Yeah, I think now I am a senior coach. You know, you do need that one person you lead on a little bit more just to pass things by them because... Yeah. You're bombarded with ideas and theories and people telling you how to do things, and your job as a leader is to make sense of it all and present something to your players that they can understand and deliver on. And so I think it's important for a senior coach to have that person that they can talk to. And I think in the 9 years I spent at Hawthorn, that relationship just got stronger and stronger. And it wasn't like... It was feisty at times because you know what Clarko's like. He's a passionate man about some of his ideas, and some of them get a little bit crazy from time to time. And you know, I'd have to go like, "Oh, that might be one of those ones you just need to sleep on and never think about for a couple of days." And I think that was his sign from me that I'm not sure about that one. But we had a great relationship. We still have. We still talk a lot about footy and bounce ideas around and try and help each other where we can, even though it's a competitive game. And when Brisbane plays Hawthorn, the gloves are on. And
you're heated in the box too. I enjoyed watching that.
Yeah, it was fun. My emotions were, I don't know what it was. I guess it's just because the old team. But
yeah, of course.
It was probably, I'll put that down as my worst day in the box in terms of firing up a few times. Yeah. It's just the competitive nature. You know, We all love each other, but we all want to beat each other.
Were there any any texts or jibes pre-match to Clarko just winding him up?
No, we were relatively quiet on that front and didn't receive anything from the players. I'd have to say it was one of the most strangest days I had in footy because I hadn't been coaching Brisbane that long. I'd been 7 or 8 games, and here I am with these blokes that I've been with for 9 years and we had all that success, and suddenly I'm in the box coaching against them, you know.
It would have been like coaching against your kids almost.
It was a little bit like that. It was quite strange.
And you would have been telling the Brisbane players about how to get under the skin and how to beat all these Hawthorn players.
Yeah, I know. Jack Gunson couldn't forgive me. I spoke to him a few weeks back. He said, why did you tag me in that game? I said, that's because I respect you, Jack, you know.
Well done.
but, It was a strange day. I'm glad it's out of the way, and it probably won't be that strange the next time it happens. But some wonderful friendships at Hawthorn that will last forever, and I'm looking forward to those reunions we have down the tracks.
All we've got one next year. I can't believe
it's 10 years since 2008. So yeah, so we'll be able to have a few of those over the next few years. It'll be great.
Hi, sorry to interrupt. Emily Anglin here. I just wanted to remind you of some of our other episodes of the Talking Footy podcast. There's Wayne Carey.
Go and have a couple of beers, maybe a few more than a couple, after the game. Recovery Saturday, and by lunchtime Saturday afternoon, we'd be all together as a team. And that's why I think part of why we were such a good team, because we're so close off it. You know, a few more beers with the mates. And if we didn't have a Friday night game the week after, we'd generally back up again on Sunday. So it's not a bad stint.
Trent Cotchin.
It's a game. I know that a lot of people's lives and weeks depend on the result, but the reality is the sport I play is a game, whereas my life is what's most important.
Bob Murphy.
Rodney Eade, the tyrant, took you and Scott West aside in a secret meeting and said, start up a bit of trouble today. Now, I didn't know anything about that. First bounce of the practice match, I found a bit of a sore spot for you, and then all of a sudden for me, the lights went out.
Make sure you check them out and be sure to leave us a review. It's easy. Jump on iTunes, search Talking Footy Podcast and give us a rating. Also, feel free to let us know who you want to hear from next on Twitter using the hashtag TalkingFootyPod. Thanks for listening. I'll let you get back to it.
I mean, one of the other really close relationships you've got that precedes Hawthorn is Brendan Bolton. Obviously from Tasmania and another career coach, and arguably another sort of vertically challenged coach as well.
Well, the coaching staff at Hawthorn were all Oompa Loompas.
They had to be, didn't they?
You had to be under 5'8" to get a job.
She did there for a while. How'd you go coaching against Bolton?
It was sort of different. I suppose it was different.
Your relationship with Bolt. Where's that come from?
Brendan played for the Tassie Mariners when I coached the Tassie Mariners, so I met him as a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
And as a player, he's one of those players a coach loves, because he would give his all every time that he played. You know, not the most talented person, not the quickest person, not the cleanest with his hands, but the best at trying to improve his game by far. And so he played with us for a couple of years, was a regular in our team. He then went and had a successful playing career in Tassie, and at a fairly young age became a playing coach, I think, at North Hobart, and had some success. Injuries sort of caught up with him. I think he had sort of hamstring injuries, and so he really threw himself into his coaching. He rang me and asked, could he come over for a week to the Hawks for a week's work experience. I think he was coaching Clarence in the TF State League down Tassie at the time. And I had a word to Clarko and said, look, this young bloke's pretty keen, enthusiastic. He's a bit of an expert on learning as well. He's done some study overseas. What about we get him over, but he has to do a bit of a presentation to us on what he knows about learning. So Clarko said, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. So we got Bolts over for a week. He impressed us all. He went back and coached his year in Tassie. We needed someone to coach Box Hill the next year. Clarko and I were overseas when that position became vacant. We both looked at each other at the same time and said, what about young Bolts?
Straight away.
And he went through a process, but he was always the person that we were keen to get. And at the time, things weren't going great at Box Hill. We didn't think we needed someone to go in and really tidy it up and make it like a little mini Hawthorn, I guess. And that was his task when he arrived. And he certainly did that for a couple of years. Box Hill became a really strong club, played in finals both years. And then a spot popped up for an assistant coach's role after 2 years of doing the Box Hill role. And we promoted him into that. As a midfield coach, and then he became the forward line coach, and then he got the Carlton job. And it was just been amazing to see the transformation of a 16-year-old lad into an AFL coach. So him and I are great friends, I suppose. And the strange part about it was when we played Carlton a few weeks ago, me internally, I really wanted to beat Carlton, but there was a bit in me that didn't want to beat Bolts. It's sort of strange. I don't know what it was, because I suppose because we're both clubs down the bottom of the ladder and we're striving to rise, that sometimes when those two clubs play each other, one of them has to win and one of them has to lose, and the one that loses probably gets canned, and the one that wins, they're making progress. And we all know that that's not how footy is, but that's how it can be treated. So, I felt a little bit sorry for him that he was going to have to live through that week that Brisbane, the team on the bottom of the ladder, actually beat his team. And we all know footy's not as simple as that. It's just how it is on the day sometimes. And they had a few injuries. We were up and about, and that worked out for us. And it didn't work out for him. But, we had a chat the next day and talked about the game. And I think we'll be lifelong buddies.
That's what it's all about, right?
It is, at the end of the day.
Well, what sort of a coach are you, Fags? You've coached the coaches. You've been in football for as long as you have in so many different roles.
Yeah.
What sort of a coach are you?
Well, I'm very relationship-based coach, and I suppose the other word I'd use about me, I think people would describe me, I'm an enabler and an empowerer. Mm-hmm. I honestly believe that you get the best results when you've got everyone committed to the cause and feeling like they have the ability to speak up and to influence and to make the place a better place. And that's the culture we've tried to get going at Brisbane. The players are responding really well to it. I expect them to have an opinion on everything when I ask them. Yep. I don't like it when I sit in a team meeting and I ask for their voice on something that I don't get much of a return. They've learnt that. They're now really into the fact that they can make the club what they want to make it. So I guess all the way along, I'm still that teacher. I'm still trying to teach everybody, whether it be players or our coaches, to be better at what they do.
Yep.
And the fundamental premise upon which all that is built, though, is strong relationships and trust. I don't think you can develop people until they know that you're in their corner and that all you want is for them to be the best that they can be.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I go about it. My first thing I did when I got the Brisbane coaching job was I caught up with every single player for anywhere between half an hour and an hour, and I asked them three questions. What's working well here? What needs to improve? And if you were the senior coach, what would be the two or three things that you'd focus on? And from asking those three questions of everyone, I saw some really clear trends, and some of them I'd predicted, but some I hadn't. And I was able to implement a lot of those things because there was a critical mass of players that were saying those things need to fix up, they need to be improved. So what our players worked out straight away was I was going to listen to them. And a lot of the things that we've put in place have worked really, really well, and they've been players' ideas. So I think they clearly understand that they're on the journey with us, and they're part of it, and it's not me or a couple of other people coming in and ruling the world and this is how we're going to do it and this is the way forward. We're all doing it together.
You actually make it sound really easy.
No, it's not easy. It has its trials and tribulations. Yeah. And sometimes as a coach, you've got to shut your mouth and listen, because I think the key to good leadership is asking the right questions and listening more than it is telling. And I very much like it when the players work out solutions themselves and they own performance themselves. You know, at the end of the day, you want them to be able to say, we did it ourselves. That's the greatest thing. So in a way, you're trying to give them that gift, I suppose, to understand the game, to understand values like selfless and how important that is in a team and playing roles. And I've spent all of our time this year just learning about that and using examples from not just AFL but all over the world in all walks of life of how those values are critical.
Did you think the opportunity to be a senior AFL coach had passed you by?
Probably, yeah. It's funny. My philosophy on life, and people have got different philosophies and no one's right, no one's wrong. Mine's always been, do the best job that you can in the job that you've got, and another door will always open for you. And so I always harboured desires to coach. Mm-hmm. I perhaps thought that because I didn't have an AFL background in terms of playing, that would always probably hold me back. As my career evolved, it sort of went, as we've talked about tonight, all the different things that I've done, and I absolutely enjoyed every role that I had. And then, to my surprise, I was contacted by the Brisbane Lions. Greg Swan rang me in. He said to me, what are you deep down, a footy manager or a coach? I said, I'm a coach. That's what I love. And that's what I'd love to do. And he goes, oh, that's all I wanted to hear. He said, will you come into our process? And I said, yep, I'll give it a go. And I must admit, I was pretty terrifying at the age of 55 going for an AFL coaching job. And it's sort of crazy because I'd been on the other side of the table interviewing coaches
plenty.
In processes over the years in my role as a GM of footy. So here I was on the other side of the table being grilled by everybody and on my philosophies and what I would like to do. And the other bit that was hard about it was leaving Hawthorn, because I loved Hawthorn. And I must admit, I always saw myself as, all right, I'm probably going to be at Hawthorn now till the days are up, as long as they wanted me, and not thinking this opportunity would pop up, and it did. And fortunately enough, I was able to win the process and got the job. And, it's been a whirlwind ever since.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
What advice would you have to aspiring coaches coming into that process now? Sam Mitchell, for example.
My personal view is, and look, I know there's all different ways to be a great coach or become a senior coach. I think at some point in time you need to coach your own team to find out whether you really do love it. Because it's challenging, you know, at an AFL club. You've got 50 players on your list. They all want to be successful. Not all of them end up being successful. You've got to manage them. There's a whole lot of different personalities. There's all your staff you've got to manage. And then you've got to work with media, sell the brand, get your messaging right. There's 1,001 things you need to do. So for me, I reckon, funny as it sounds, at the age of 55, I was really ready because I'd had so many experiences over the years of coaching my own team. I'd been a GM of footy. I'd run a football department. I'd help teach coaches.
Yeah.
There were so many lessons that I had along the way that I felt like when I got into the chair that I was really well prepared. But the greatest thing, I think, is to either have coached your own team or at least had some real genuine experiences managing people in pressure situations. So now, having said that, I know some of the great coaches never coached their own teams before they coached an AFL team, and I accept that great coaches can come from all walks of life and different pathways, but that's what I believe in.
Yeah. I mean, you come from, obviously, Hawthorn in Melbourne and then Tasmania football heartland to Brisbane, where AFL is potentially the second, or arguably the second sport in Brisbane. Has that been a challenge, promoting not only Brisbane but more broadly the game in an NRL stronghold?
Yeah, it's very different to Melbourne. I can walk down the street up in Brisbane and no one knows who I am, and that's cool. I actually like that.
You were mobbed in the streets of Melbourne, though.
I wasn't mobbed, but people tend to recognise you a little bit more down here. It's funny, I jump off a plane now and at Melbourne Airport and you see people pointing, oh, that's the coach of Brisbane. You know, when you go to Brisbane, no one knows who the coach of Brisbane is.
That'd be nice.
It is good.
Yeah.
But with that sort of comes, like, you got in Melbourne, there's a lot of pressure just created because you're in Melbourne. There's the media, there's the focus, it's the football heartland, and the same probably in Adelaide and Perth because their football is the number one, AFL football is the number one sport, whereas in Brisbane it's not. So we have to find ways to put pressure on ourselves to improve because it's just easy just to be up there and no one really cares.
It's almost a bit of a paradox in that way, isn't it?
In some ways it's funny and it is, and in a way, it's good for players because you can go up there and concentrate on your footy and you haven't got all that pressure that you've got on you down here, which is a bit of a worry now because I'm seeing more and more players suffering from mental health issues, and I'm convinced it's because there is so much pressure on them now externally, not so much internally. I think internally clubs are becoming way better at taking the pressure off.
Yeah.
But there's so much media now, so much analysis of the game, all that. I really do worry about that. But we have a nice environment up in Brisbane where it's not necessarily like that, but we want to get better. We want to improve. And the Queensland sporting market is they follow winners up there. So if we can get Brisbane to become a strong competitive team again, we'll fill the Gabba up. And we've even noticed that recently, just because we've been winning a few more games, yeah, our crowds have gone up by 2,000 or 3,000 the last three times we've played there. And so that's a good sign. But it is a different place. People aren't as clued into AFL as they are to NRL. But I'm sure that there's a lot of kids up there that play AFL, women and men.
Yeah.
And there's tremendous interest in the sport, and it's got massive potential if both ourselves and Gold Coast can become more competitive.
Sunday, join us for Game Day.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our 10th season of Game Day.
Hosted by Hamish McLaughlin, every Sunday at 10 a.m. on the channels of 7.
She caught up exclusively with Rui this morning.
They're pretty confident as well that structurally it's okay.
Christian Petrarca's in love with Christian Petrarca.
It's where all of footy's big names come to play.
You touched on there the pressures internally v externally and some of the challenges that are facing the game now by way of mental health and that media scrutiny. I mean, we used to speak about at Hawthorn, you know, the opinions that matter the most are your coaches and your peers and what happens inside these four walls.
Yeah.
How does the game tackle that? Because it's looming large really quickly.
Yeah, and I know the AFL Players Association are all over it. And the other thing with is social media.
Yeah.
And, you know, anyone can write anything about anyone out there. And if you happen to be one of those young blokes that reads everything that gets written about you, it can do your head in. Mm. And I think the best thing to do is education of our players and teach them to cope, how to cope and how to survive in that sort of environment, because yeah, it's not going to go away. And the other thing is that the clubs have just got to get really good at making sure that players have good balance in their life, that it's not all football, football, football.
Yeah.
That they do have their days off, that they even get days off that we don't have to give them off. I know for us, we travel, we play on Sundays a lot interstate, and so you're travelling back on Sunday night, you get back to Brisbane at 11 o'clock. You could easily have the players in at the club the next day, but we choose to not do that. Mm. We don't see them till Tuesday because we think that helps their life balance and their energy.
Yeah.
So I think you got to be constantly aware of that and take mental health seriously. It's real, you know. There was this stigma attached to it. Oh, you're soft if you're like that. But no, there's so many people that suffer from it, not just in AFL but in life in general. We've got to look out for them and look after them and know that if we do, people who suffer from it can get back to living a normal life. You know, I'm really quite passionate about that. So, you know, I just want to just for us, our little bit is that we just got to keep good balance at our footy club and making sure they're rested, energised, that they're studying or doing something outside of footy to make them appreciate the bigger aspects of life, because it is a bubble, AFL, and it's not normal. Yeah, I think that's a really important function of an AFL club now.
How does a senior coach like yourself, who has the experience, relate to and sell that message, if you like, about social media, about the challenges and the disconnect between the game and its demands and the society more broadly. How do you get that message across, given that you're sort of you're removed from, you know, social media in particular?
Yeah. I guess on things like this, and when you get the opportunity, you talk about it and you don't sweep it under the carpet.
Yeah.
We have various forums, you know, the Coaches Association, the coaches meet regularly. We meet with Gil McLaughlin, we meet with the AFLPA. They're all the bodies that can actually help with the education and selling that message. And I think hopefully too, and this may already be happening, but I think to some degree, and I hope the people in the media don't take this the wrong way, but I think we need to educate media a little bit and to understand that sometimes the things that they say,
yeah,
I know these boys are big boys and they're meant to be able to cop it, but some of it gets pretty personal and pretty over the top. And
so
we need to understand, I think, as a collective group in football,
yep,
the risks.
So from it's an interesting perspective, because from a media's perspective, they've got a job to do.
Yeah.
And their job is to report on certain events, circumstances, games, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And in essence, particularly in social media, it's the players that open themselves up to read and absorb what is said or what is not said.
Yeah.
It's a fine line.
Yeah, it is a fine line. I mean, I've got daughters myself, you know, and I've seen one of them in particular get upset about things that have been written on Facebook and Instagram about them. And I can remember having a good parental chat with her at the time and saying, you know, well, I don't even know why you involve yourself in it. Why don't you just cut it off? And you don't need it in your life. You can survive without it. And I think that's what she ended up doing, which is good, because it can be cruel. And nobody likes to be attacked and vilified or criticised unfairly by people who you don't know often. It's a tricky issue. I don't have all the answers. I am worried about it though, and we've got to keep searching for ways to help our players, and not just our players, but our coaches, deal with it.
Yeah. Gil McLaughlin, CEO of the AFL, has introduced his annual dinner, whereby he invites all of the coaches around, of which you're an attendee for the first time this year.
I was the only interstate coach who turned up.
Is that right?
Yeah, I thought they were all going to go there.
What was the excuse?
It was just the Melbourne coaches and me.
So what did you bring to the table? What happens there? What's discussed from it and Queensland perspective?
Yeah, well, we talk about all the issues in the game, whether it be umpiring, whether it be the T20 version of AFL, rules of the game, issues in the game.
Yep.
They all get talked about. It's a good forum. It's interesting, though, what I found that night, and it's no criticism of the coaches that are based in Melbourne, but the coaches in Melbourne are very Melbourne-centric, and they don't understand necessarily the issues that you face in some of those other states.
Yep.
And there was just a couple of ideas that came up, and I've gone, well, yeah, how are we going to do that in Brisbane? And they all went, yeah, we never thought of that. You know? So it's good to have a voice there and talk about those sorts of things. And as I say, it's not because they don't care about it. It's just because sometimes you're out of sight, out of mind. They don't understand the issues that you have.
Yep.
So it's good to have a voice there, and I'm glad I turned up.
Yeah.
And I think they appreciated that I did.
Yeah, I bet they did. as we sort of opened with you, Tasmanian Football Hall of Famer, can we talk about the state of football in Tassie? And it's something particularly close to your heart, of course, and you're passionate about. What's happening down there? Do they get their own team? Is it something you'd be interested in tying together in some way, shape or form down the track?
I think it's not right that Tasmania haven't got a team. I've thought that for a long time. I mean, there's four traditional football states: Western Australia, South Australia, Victoria and Tasmania. And it just seems, and I don't know the reason why, but in the expansion to the national competition, Tassie's always been the poor relation.
Yeah.
And I don't think we'll ever really have a truly national competition until Tassie's in it. Then the vibe will be right. It's just the right decision. And I think the AFL understand that. People in Tassie are passionate about their football. The concerns have always been financial, their ability to support a team.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing has always been that, you know, New South Wales, Queensland were expansion states, new markets. Tassie's not a new market. They love their footy down there. They don't need a team.
Yeah.
But as we know, you know, they're passionate about Hawthorn. They're passionate about North Melbourne. They turn up to the games.
Yeah.
They love their footy. And I'm sure that they would really embrace their own team if it were to be. And you look at the players that Tasmania have produced over the years, and the even other people playing other roles in sport, in AFL footy, it's huge for the population. And I'm hopeful that some time down the track, while I'm still on the planet, that actually occurs.
Yep.
You know, it would be a tremendous boost to Tasmanian football. I know the Tassie Mariners, when we had the Tassie Mariners full-time in the TAC Cup, the interest in footy went through the roof, and the number of kids that wanted to try out for it just increased rapidly, because what they could see was a direct link to being able to play AFL footy. And unfortunately, that's been taken away too, so I'd love to see that come come back again.
Yeah.
You know, the Brendan Boltons of the world came through that process. Now, he didn't turn out to be an AFL footballer, but he's an AFL coach.
Yeah.
And a lot of them turned out to be great AFL players. You know, Russell Robertson, Brad Green, Grant Birchall, all came through that sort of that system. So the talent's down there.
Mm-hmm.
We need to reignite interest in footy in Tassie, get them passionate again, and the best way to do it is have our own team.
Very passionate about it. I like it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to throw a few names at you, Fags. I just want you to spit out the first word that comes to your mind.
Yeah.
It's always fun. We'll start with an easy one. Neil Danaher.
Loyal.
David Neitz.
Hard as nails.
Brendan Boltons. Don't think.
Educator.
That wasn't the first word. I'd like to know what was.
Yeah.
Buddy Franklin.
Massive talent.
Gil McLaughlin.
Innovative.
Al Clarkson.
Legend.
Sam Mitchell.
Smart.
Tim Steins.
Oh, gee, Jimmy. Kind.
Luke Hodge.
Inspirational leader.
Dane Zorko.
Human energizer.
That's a good one. Cyril Rioli.
Sublime.
Good. We're going to say delicious then. Brisbane Lions.
Improving.
I like it. As a coach, I'd imagine you don't like asking the question, who is the best player you've coached or been associated with, but who have you enjoyed being involved with from a coaching player point of view?
Tough question. I, in some ways, Russell Robertson at Melbourne.
Yep.
Because I coached Russell in the Tassie Mariners and sort of discovered him, really. I remember the first night I turned up to the squad training that he was involved with on the northwest coast of Tasmania, and I just noticed him. I can still remember him running around. He had a pair of LA Lakers basketball shorts on, and I just liked his bounce.
Yeah.
And it's weird. And I said to the coach there at the time, I said, "Oh, who's that bloke?" "Oh, Russell Robertson. Is he any good?" "No, he's not much good, mate." And I said, "Oh, right, really?" And then we trained, and he moved well, and he had power. And I said to this coach, "Who's the best player here?" And he showed me this bloke, and so I pitted them together and did a bit of one-on-one, and Russell actually thrashed this bloke, and I'm thinking, there might be something in this young fella. And anyway, we picked him in our squad, and he became a really good player for us and was drafted by Melbourne and then went on to play over 200 games. And it's one of the best marks I've ever seen for his size. He's only 5'10", but he could take a mark like you wouldn't believe. So, and he was a guy that made the most of his talent and developed other angles to his game. So in some ways I really enjoyed Russell because I sort of was on the journey with him for almost all of his career, from discovering him to him, you know, reaching his full potential at Melbourne. He might have had a couple of years there once I left. And it looks really hard at Hawthorn. There are so many blokes there that are great for a variety of reasons. You know, Sam Mitchell I so admire for his ability to continue to adapt and grow his game. He's not the most gifted athlete you've ever seen, but he just finds ways to get better and better. And Hodge, just for his selflessness and his leadership, would just play whatever role he needed to play for the team, even though he could probably be the best midfielder. If he had to go to halfback, he'd go to halfback. If he had to go forward, he'd go forward. And just his ability to coach on field, I've never seen anyone like him. And we all saw it the other night when he was mic'd up.
Yeah.
And I think that opened a lot of eyes to why Luke Hodge has been so pivotal to Hawthorn's success.
I mean, you'll go to the draft this year and next couple of years with a glut of opportunities. At its most basic or simplistic, what do you look for in a footballer? In young footballers and more generally, if you have the opportunity to trade,
You look for good character first and foremost, because I think ultimately, if you're going to have success, you need a team full of great characters that understand teamwork and selflessness and playing your role. It's not about you and all of that. So you need to look for that first and foremost. Then I reckon you need to look for game sense, guys that really understand how to play the game, can read the game, know where to stand, know what to do. It's got footy smarts. I really rate that. You obviously need a certain amount of speed, and agility is an important part in footy now. So much congestion. The players who can zig and zag out of the congestion and get the ball out, incredibly important. What do you think I'd say, Sully?
No, I wasn't sure. I'm really not sure.
Yeah.
What's the best advice you've received?
Be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Once upon a time when I first started coaching, I was trying to be somebody else, and I pretty soon worked out that you can only be yourself, and somebody had already given me that advice, and I hadn't taken it, but I worked it out pretty quickly. And, just be yourself, trust yourself. I think that's being genuine. I think people like it when you're genuine.
We certainly had quite a few at Hawthorn and Clarko, plenty, but what's your favourite coaching cliche?
God, I don't. Do I use them?
And I don't think I have. I haven't picked any up.
Cliches. Like 1 week at a time and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're only as good as your last game. There's some rivers. They're brilliant. Eh? There's some brilliant ones around. It is what it is. That's taken all a bit of a... That one's plenty, come up a bit this year.
Yeah.
I don't really have a favourite one, but I do laugh when I hear them, and I do laugh when I hear people using them.
If I asked some of the Brisbane boys, what would they say? Have you got any idiosyncrasies that you've picked up now that you're head coach as opposed to being GM or coach of the coaches?
I don't know. You're better off to ask other people that. I haven't been pointed out for.
Okay. Just not comfortable enough yet to start cranking you.
I hope they are. I want them to be.
Yeah.
I think that's all part of it, you know, that they feel comfortable enough to do that.
Yeah.
They sort of laugh at my music taste and sometimes the clothes I wear.
There's a slight generational gap there, isn't there?
Slight generational gap. I'd, do my best.
Bags, when was the last time you cried?
When I left Hawthorn.
You did?
Yep. When I had to talk to the players.
Yeah.
And the staff. Yeah, there was a lot of... we've been through a lot of things together and there's a lot of great friendships there, and it was a very hard place to tug myself away from, I guess. And when you have to stand up in front of them and sort of say thank you and goodbye, and you look around the room and you see all those faces... and all those things you've been through, that gets a little bit hard. So, I teared up a bit when I left the Hawks.
What was Clarko's reaction? I'd imagine he would have been happy, but it would have hurt losing his right-hand man as well.
Yeah, I think he was probably a little bit surprised by it all. I hadn't really talked to anyone much about my desire to coach, and I suppose he, like me, probably thought it wasn't going to happen either. So... what is it now? It's August. If you had asked me this question in August last year, would I be coaching the Brisbane Lions? I would have laughed at you. So it all happened pretty quickly. And I just decided to take the opportunity. So I probably figure it left a few people shocked, and probably none more so than Clarko.
Yep.
But I know he's also really happy for me because I'm doing what I always wanted to do. And... I think, once he got over that shock and everything, it's all positive, and we've shared some great moments together. And who knows, we might share some more somewhere down the tracks. Funny old game footy.
Yeah, it is.
Places you bob up.
Goes full circle, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Where do you, this is a funny question, but where do you see yourself in 20 years' time? I can imagine you donning your favourite pair of Speedos, sunning yourself on Noosa somewhere.
20 years' time. I'll be 76. I hope I'm a grandfather.
Yep.
That's really important to me. I love to see my daughters have some children, and that'd be fun. Hopefully I'm enjoying life. Hopefully I'm still involved in footy in some way, not full on, but in some way, keep the interest.
Yep.
And I hope Ursa and I and all my family are still fit and healthy. I think they're the most important things in life. I think, learned that when the big rough got cancer, mate. It sort of hit you right home, just how important. You can have all these great things and have all this profile and all that, but at the end of the day, your health's the most important thing. So, yeah, I just hope I'm still healthy, sorely, and still got a smile on my face and still optimistic and still doing something meaningful in my life.
I've no doubt you will be, Fags. Thank you very much for the chat. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I do. It's gone pretty quick, hasn't
it? Good, wasn't it?
I didn't know. You're pretty good at this, mate. Well done.
It's easy when you've got a good subject to work with, Fags. Thank you.
No worries. Pleasure.
We're talking footy.